You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Shanika.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
Hey, Shanika, for those that haven't come across you online,
yes,
tell the listeners why we're talking. What's going on hot?
So for me, it's all about food and nutrition and medication. So that's my whole jazz. That's what I'm passionate about.
Food, nutrition, and medication. Did you miss one? Is it old people too?
It is old. Well, let's not call them old people.
Oh, come on. We're all friends here. Let's be honest.
Well, and you know, actually, because I'm in school and we'll talk about that too, you know, they actually refer to them now as older people. Like they don't
older
necessarily.
Older people.
Yes, yes.
Older like people.
Older people, yes.
Well, I was all excited when I was going through LinkedIn.
Yes.
I must have been hungry or something because I saw that you had geriatric. And for some reason in my head, I was thinking bariatric.
Oh, goodness.
So I'm like, good. We're going to have something to talk about. My lifestyle and so on. But
yes.
But no, it's the older people.
Yes, yes.
Where's your interest in that? Where did that come from?
So it comes from a lot of places. I've been a clinical pharmacist for 12 years. So the last 6 years, I was working specifically with mostly geriatric patients.
12 years? Did you graduate high school when you were 9?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But I know it doesn't feel like 12 years either. But yes.
So you've been working with geriatric for 12 years.
Well, not the whole 12 years, but the last 8 or so. And then I specialized in, I'm in Texas, so we have collaborative practice. So I worked with a lot of geriatric patients that had diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, the gamut, heart failure. And as a clinical pharmacist, of course, with collaborative practice, we can adjust medications. But I had so many patients that didn't seem to understand how they could use their food to improve their health. And, you know, a lot of them want to get off some of their medications, but they really didn't know how. So I really became passionate about trying to teach them how to unite the two of them together so that we could help them find a happy medium and a healthier lifestyle.
Now, if you would have been not working with the geriatric patients for that time, do you think you would have still focused on them, or do you think it was, because you've spent time with them that this all happened to come together because the need was there and so on?
I definitely think spending the time with them had, you know, pushed me even more towards geriatrics and nutrition. I had my own story. You know, I lost about 50 pounds. So I really learned a lot about nutrition for myself. And then my patients also saw that transition over a couple of years and were like, what are you doing? You know, to ask me. And so I was like, let me see how I can really move this for that patient population.
Yeah. See, I've lost 50 pounds too, but I found 60. So.
Oh, no.
So you had lost it and you were saying then, hey, I've done this and this has improved my life and so on. And how can I share that with people?
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, especially when we think about diabetes and high blood pressure, a lot of those, well, especially when we're talking about type 2 diabetes, you know, those things are nutrition related, not completely, but we can make so many differences. So as people were wanting to know more about it, I was like, okay, let me see. Especially having the knowledge behind medication. So knowing how we can play with the medication while we're adjusting their new dietary habits was a big key factor in that.
I know we're supposed to be politically correct, but only the pharmacists are listening to this. So
Okay.
Is it the old fat people that makes your Now stop. Now the audience can't see this, but why are you pointing at me?
I am not pointing at you. Stop it.
No, but really, are you, okay, joking aside.
Yes.
Are you going up to somebody who, let's say they're older?
Mm-hmm.
Are you tending to look for somebody who's, not look, but you know, is your clientele someone who's a little on the heavier side, or are you saying, hey, you might look perfect on the outside, but we're going for, you know, diabetes and all that kind of stuff? Or are you tending to look for someone who's a little heavier, or is that who, you know, is it that you're attracted to, in other words?
No, I'm looking for anybody that has that chronic illness that's older that is wanting to make that change. So, I mean, some of them are overweight or obese, but then, you know, some of them are not. But, you know, we also know that just because you're smaller, we won't say skinny per se, right, but just because you're smaller, we know that doesn't mean you're healthy on the inside. And I have plenty of smaller patients, you know, that blood sugars were going up and down because the food that they were eating wasn't the right types of foods. So it's either or.
Yeah, my brother and I would talk about that, where people around our age, so 50 or so, I guess all through the years, you look at some guys, and some guys are not even looking at the inside, but some guys are truly like skinny, fat people, and some guys exactly. are fat, skinny people. In other exactly. words, they might be in shape, but they've got a few more pounds on them, or they're not in shape, but they're slender.
Yep. Yep. And we have, you know, unfortunately, we equate slender with healthy. And, you know, although we know that BMI, especially when you start talking about, you know, different race and ethnicities,
yeah.
it doesn't go equally across all the boards. So, you know, you have to really look at those numbers, you know, the diabetes, the blood sugars, the blood pressures, all of those things. And you can't just go by somebody's weight, because weight is not going to be the thing that is the true determining factor of your health.
Yeah. So it could even be the same fat percentage even.
Exactly.
You know, it could even be the same muscle mass and fat percentage, but where it is.
Exactly. Yep. So we have to think about all those things.
You know what, though, Shanika? I'm sick of going in there, and I joke about this. My listeners probably think I'm like, I don't know how I'm categorized, but I'm overweight.
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah?
No, I'm just listening to you. I'm overweight, too, by the categories. So, yes.
No, I joke. I could lose some. A lot of it's where the fat ends up, isn't it?
Exactly.
That stomach area, it's bad for a guy to carry it there.
Well, and it's bad for a woman too. Most times though, you know, you just think you see more men are prominent with it in that area than women, but women carry it there too. So we still, you know, that's why I think it's important we re-educate too with the talking about nutrition, but then not focusing on your weight as much as like your waist circumference and those kind of things, because those are the indicators that are really going to show where those chronic conditions are leading.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, Shanika, if I've got my numbers right on you, my timelines looking at LinkedIn, you're not acting as a pharmacist under employment anywhere right now. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why not?
So last year, I took a leap of faith. I actually purchased a franchise, and it's called Chefs for Seniors. And we are actually an in-home meal service. And because of my love and my passion for nutrition and seniors, and because I realized that also, you know, if you have a healthy senior, they can stay home. They can live. And in the middle of COVID, which has turned into a whole different thing, you know, having that access to healthy meals is a big deal. So I do still do some like PRN pharmacist stuff on the side, but I left to really focus on building the business, because I realized I couldn't work a full-time job and try to grow a business at the same time. So I had to decide which one at that moment was more important.
Well, not a business, two businesses, have Divine Hands, which is not a franchise.
No, that is not. That is my baby. So that is the one that I'm also nurturing, which is the nutrition and pharmacy connection, because I believe that pharmacy and nutrition do intertwine. So working with those patients to help them one-on-one, not necessarily adjusting their medications at this point, because I'm not working with a physician.
Yeah.
But under the understanding, okay, let's go through all of your medications. Let's look at them. Let's write up a whole plan for you so that you can take that to your physician. And then let's talk about how we're going to make these nutritional changes and what that looks like and what you need to talk to your physician about, as the medications might need to decrease if you're making those lifestyle changes.
Do those two businesses intertwine at all?
Unfortunately, not quite, because with the Chefs for Seniors, because they also have franchisers that have nothing to do with health and medicine, then, you know, I try to keep those two separate. But we can connect with their physician if they need a specialized diet.
Are you saying because the franchisor... they want this kind of like standardized.
Exactly.
And they don't want to say, well, this one is also a pharmacist doing this. And so
exactly. So since, you know, the franchisees are a bevy of different people, you know, you have former chefs, you have people that have been in nutrition, you have myself as a pharmacist. So they wanted to just focus on the nutrition, the good food, and that we can collaborate with your healthcare professionals, but not focus individually on the person that, you know, owns the franchise and how they might help you. Mm-hmm.
My wife and children went to the cottage last night. And so for dinner, I had chips and it was going to be chips and cheese. And I got to the fridge and I'm like, are you kidding me? All that was there was Swiss.
Oh.
So I had chips and grated Swiss cheese. And I found some other cheddar. So I've had a couple helpings of chips and cheese. Well, and she was actually gone last night, so I didn't have a good dinner. So I must be starving. So I want to talk more about the Chefs for Seniors.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
When did you... You know, the chicken or the egg? And see, there I go with food again.
It's all related.
I've got to be hungry. Because I don't use that often. Bring us back to when you started to think about this. Was it, how did the franchise make its way there? Did you look for it? Did you come across it just through an ad somewhere? How did that come together?
It's actually an interesting story. So going back to my weight loss, I started, a couple of people at work asked me about meal prepping. So I kind of started just doing it on the side for a few people at work. And, you know, I started really realizing that I did have a passion for that as well, like the cooking component and helping people to have healthy meals. And I really focused on lower carb, not keto, but lower carb meals. And, you know, because we were in a high volume clinic, a lot of times for lunch, they would be running behind. So it was a lot easier if they just already had, you know, food at work. So they didn't have to go out, you know, they didn't have to go buy the fast food, you know, take your pick and, you know, hurry back and eat it. They had a nice, good, healthy, portioned home cooked lunch, you know, most days of the week.
All right, Shanika, I ain't no genius, and my listeners know that. They know that by now. I ain't no genius, but if I see this beautiful lady, and all of a sudden, she starts losing weight, I'm saying, I sure ain't gonna depend on her for food, because she's starving. She can't even find the damn food, much less prepare it. No, I'm joking.
No. And I mean, and it's funny because I love to bake too. So they know that. But, you know, it started with like one or two people and then they taste it.
I'm imagining this, that you're starting to lose weight, but you're bringing lunch.
Exactly.
And they're like, well, wait a minute. She's losing weight. She's looking healthier and she's eating this stuff.
Yes.
And they see that combination and they're like, Shanika, can I, you know, can you help me?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's funny because somebody had asked me before and I was like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. And then, you know, maybe like 9 months later, they asked me again and I was like, okay, let's just try it out. And, you know, timing is everything. So
how do you even work that out? I mean, I imagine they said, we'll buy this and then we'll pay you an extra this for your time and stuff like that. How did you even, because I imagine these were your friends. Was it easy to talk to them about like, you know, the financial part of this?
Yeah, I actually did. I created, you know, like when it was just a couple of people, I just said, okay, this is how much it's going to be. And then, you know, they paid me every week and I created a menu every week and they would get to select a couple of options. And, you know, obviously as it grew, I charged a little bit more because the time started taking longer time too. But yeah.
That's a starting off little business. How did you decide your profit right off the bat?
So I was having to go in and kind of calculate what it was going to be to purchase the food and my time. And then, of course, you know, because we have meal prep places online and things like that. I did some research trying to see how much they charged. And obviously, because they're in a physical location, I didn't charge as much as them because I know they're charging upcharge for being in a building and rent and space and all those things too. But yeah, I just, you know, I sat down and I did the research and calculated what it was to call, you know, buy the food every week and add my time.
You'd bring it in daily?
No, they will get it once a week.
And they'd keep it at work?
Yeah, most of them would keep it at work because we had a lot of refrigerators in our break room. So, you know, I would put it in bags and have people's name on the bag so they would know whose food was whose.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. How many people did you end up doing that for at
18
work?
At the highest, yeah, 18.
Wow.
Yeah, on a consistent basis. I think a few times I had about, you know, 20 or 21, but on a consistent basis, it was like 18 people.
And you dropped it off all at once?
Well, because some people worked on Monday and some, they didn't start till Tuesday. So I would either, you know, for those who worked on Monday, I brought it and then the rest I would bring on Tuesday. Because obviously I work in the building too. So, you know, I would just bring it when I started my work week.
When did you make all that then?
On Sunday. So it was fresh, like at the beginning of the week, Sunday. Yeah, I would spend my Sundays cooking.
All right, here I go again. I ain't no genius cook, but I see my wife cook, and we've got a number of children.
Yes.
And I see my wife cook, and I imagine once you've gone to the grocery store, once you've bought it and so on, it's not a whole lot different cooking for 10 that it is for 7 or 13 that it is for 10 and so on. So it's more time cutting stuff up and that, but there's only one trip to the grocery store and only one trip here and things like that. So you're sort of economies of scale almost.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you know, as you're growing it, you learn. So, you know, you start to learn, okay, you know, especially because I'm trying to also give them the correct portion. So we're talking 4 ounces of chicken, you know, the right serving of, if it's cauliflower rice, because that's what I use instead of rice, how to divide by how many people ordered so that you can get the right pounds of food and keep going.
That cauliflower rice is garbage.
No, it's delicious.
It's terrible. My wife made me like, what did they used to call those? Like a 7-layer something where it was like mashed potatoes and then real tomato-y, like ketchup.
Like a 7-layer type dip kind of thing.
Yeah, but hot, you know, hot.
Okay, okay.
And then it had peas and corn and it had hamburger in it. And
like a shepherd's pie.
That's it. Like a shepherd's pie, right?
A shepherd's pie.
So my wife makes me this one time when I told her I was trying to cut weight or do something. I forget what the hell it was. So I want to say I got home from work, but I was probably sitting on my ass at home in the afternoon just watching her cook. Anyway, I get to dinner and I get my big spoon. You know, it's not a tablespoon. It's one of those huge.
Yeah, the serving spoons.
Yeah, but it looks like a spoon, but it's just big, you know?
Yes,
and sometimes you have to use it like at night when all the spoons are in the dishwasher and you have to have cereal with it. And you kind of like, you have to decide if you shove the whole damn thing in your mouth or you just take the tip of it, you know?
And like, I know what you're talking about.
And like drain it into your mouth, you know? So anyways, I take this thing and I dish it out and it's just this beautiful buttered brown, you know, mashed potatoes on top with butter and all this stuff. I dish it out. I bite into it and it's mashed, fluffed up cauliflower. It was terrible. And I think I spit it out. It was so terrible. I told Mark, don't ever do that again to me.
Well, and see, it's funny because I had to teach my mom and dad about that. So like when my mom is a really healthy person too, so she'll try anything.
Yeah.
My dad, not so much. So like she had to transition, you know, like half rice, half cauliflower rice until, you know, he got used to the taste and the texture. So, you know, I know everybody doesn't like it at first, but I, you know, hey, it's about trying new stuff. She didn't warn you. I think if she
didn't
warned
warn
you,
me, if she would have labeled it, it was terrible. And I told her that. I never tell her that. I said, this is garbage. Don't ever do that again.
You had your mouth set on a potato. And I mean, it doesn't taste like potatoes.
Not
so,
just
yeah.
potato, butter. I mean, it was browned. It was butter. It was, oh, it goodness. Was already, I was just drooling over already. So you did 20 of these things. So then you start thinking, I'm going to make a business out of this or not?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. Obviously, you know, pharmacy is changing. So as much as I love my patients, I was still thinking, I don't know if I want to do this forever.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what will be my next move. Yeah. And so my parents had come up to visit. And my mom just happened to be like, hey, my friend is using this service, because she knew I was meal prepping. Now, I don't think at the time she thought I was going to look into it like that. But, you know, she just sent me the name of the company and it was Chefs for Seniors.
Really?
So, you know, I looked it up and I was like, okay, you know, they had a couple of NPR articles from when they first started.
Yeah, I saw some of their links on the site.
Yeah, and I filled out, you know, the information on the website, and that's how we got started.
Wow. All right, so I looked at the startup costs, and they're not huge with that with that franchise. But what was your decision from a business standpoint of saying, I want to do this franchise versus I want to do my thing? You know, like my thing being, I'm going to do better than this. I'm going to grow it. I'm going to do this. You know, like a real trying to grow this world famous this or that. What said, no, right now is the time to do the franchise? Why did you take the path of Chefs for Seniors instead of saying, hey, I'm doing this and I want to do it a little bit differently and I'm going to start my own thing and get my own logo, kind of the stuff you're doing with Divine Hands. So why did you decide to franchise with Chefs for Seniors and not go automatically and do not Divine Hands, but
another meal prep,
a meal version
place
of your own beautiful logo and stuff that you did done with Divine Hands. So why did you make that choice?
So I think when I looked at what the startup cost for trying to start that kind of business, especially with seniors and getting into a senior space, that it was gonna be more affordable and it would be smarter to go with somebody who had already laid the foundation.
Because not just the methods, but they had the name and people were familiar with them.
Well, and they weren't a big, because even though they've been around since 2014, they didn't start franchising till 2018. So they've had a lot of growth in the last, you know, 2 years, but, you know, they've still done all that background work. So helping you find a network, you know, helping you with your website, all of those things that those minute things that by the time you start adding all those costs together, it's going to cost you more than what it would to franchise. And, you know, having that support, because that's still a place that a lot of people aren't in, and trying to figure out how to enter that space.
Right.
I just wasn't sure. Cause I'm a healthcare person, but there's something about saying you're a part of a franchise that's trusted, that they're bonded, that, you know, people will see that differently than me just saying, hey, I'm Dr. Shanika. I was a clinical pharmacist and now I'm going to come cook for you.
Bonded in terms of insurance.
Exactly.
Going into the houses and that kind of
stuff. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And not just cost, but also time. Instead of getting going, now you're taking 3 nights to work on your logo. And then you've used the energy. And
exactly.
Then that stuff all adds up.
You know, it was a great experience. We still stay connected with the franchisors because we're not a big company of franchisees. They're very selective about, you know, selling the franchises to, you know, whomever they choose. So it is kind of like our own little family in a sense. And I thought that was important too, because even when I was in the process, they connected me with a couple of the franchise owners to help me decide if it was the right thing. So I could see kind of the pluses, the minuses, what they've already been through. You know, and those kind of things. So you just, until you're starting a business, you just really don't understand how many steps, it takes. And especially with food too, because it's a hit or miss type of business.
Right. It's a lot of steps. It takes time.
Yeah.
Was there an overlap, or at some point did you quit your job and say you're doing this? What kind of overlap was there, or was there overlap?
No, there was. There was about a 6-month overlap. I purchased the franchise in March of last year, and then I went for training because they do a training for you too in May. And then I went live with the business in July. And so, you know, of course you're growing. So I'm, you know, on Google. So people are contacting me and trying to learn about it. I'm trying to go on my lunch break to do my consultations with new clients, you know, or trying to do them after work. And, you know, even started cooking for a couple of clients because I really wanted to learn the business and work the business before I hired somebody else. Because obviously it's not a lot of overhead. So I wanted to be good because if something happened with the chef or anything like that, I wanted to always be able to step in because I'm the face of my business. So, you know, there was that time of overhaul. And then I just remember thinking, how am I going to network with the people that I need to network with? Because obviously, like I said, I was doing lunchtime consultations.
Consultations in terms of not yet into divine hands, but more into just like, what is our meal going to be and what are your dietary needs and that
exactly
stuff.
Making sure their kitchen is appropriate for cooking since we cook in their homes, all those kind of things. And then I just realized, I was like, well, but people I need to connect with, nurse case managers, dietitians, you know, the people that will be discharge planners, they all meet sometimes between 8 and 10 in the morning. You know, these are the times that those network meetings are happening, and I'm missing out on that. And I'm not being able to say, hey, here's a new business in this area for those patients that you think would qualify for that. So, you know.
Okay. Let me slow this down for me. So you're saying that these people that would be good referrals are meeting at times, and you should be part of those meetings, but you couldn't because you're still working or because you're just busy?
No, because I was still working.
You were still working?
I was still working. Yeah, because I worked 7:30 to 4 Monday through Friday. Mm. So, there was no chance for me to say like, okay, I'm going to be off on one day and I can get to a meeting. And then obviously, you know, this was pre-COVID. So all of these meetings are still in person for the most part. So, you know, if you're not getting in and meeting somebody or handing them your card saying, hey, let's go have a coffee, you know, let me tell you a little bit about my business, then, you know, you're missing a good, even like geriatric care managers, you know, you're missing all of these people who have access to the clients that you want to give your business to.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
There was a pharmacist that years ago, the medicine shop.
Oh, I've heard of the medicine shop. Yeah.
Cardinal owns them or used to own them or something. But their method is they said, and listeners might know better than this, but I think they used to be open from like 10 until 6. And their method was that the pharmacist should go out from, let's say, 8 until 10 every morning. And that's their time to go to the doctor's offices with their cards and get business and so on. And they wouldn't start till 10. Their business model was for that pharmacist to work, you know, till 6 or whatever. What's the recommended business model when you came in? What did you learn for the chefs for seniors? What did they say, like, you should be doing this much and you should have this employee doing this and so on? Or did they go through some of that?
Yeah, they do a little bit. They actually would give us like a list of different referral partners for us to reach out to senior living places that might be in our territory that might have those senior clients that we're looking for. So they definitely gave us that. And then obviously some people started their franchise and would just hire somebody right away. But, you know, a lot of time they recommended that you could just perhaps do the most of your, as you were growing, try to keep most of your clients on certain days so that 1 or 2 days a week in the morning, you would still have the time to do the networking or the phone calls or whatever it was you needed to do to, you know, let people know you were available and grow the business.
Was the Chefs for Seniors, was it close to what you were doing at work as far as like a week you would do?
Or? Yeah, so we actually do, when we go into the home, we cook for a week. We do a week's worth of meals. We'll grocery shop right before the service, and then we'll come in and we have what we call a toolbox, but it has like all our pots and pans and everything in there. And then we go in and we cook. It takes about 2.5 hours. We store it all, label it, and then put it in the refrigerator. We leave them with cooking instructions also.
Do the people bother you while you're cooking? You say, get out of here. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to cook. I'm joking. Yes. I'm sure that's part of it. You're supposed to be talking to them and stuff,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. We're supposed to be. So, you know, a lot of times we'll come in as I'm unpacking groceries and things like that. You know, we'll be having conversation. And then in the middle, while I'm doing most of the cooking, you know, if they are staying in the room, then, you know, they might just be sitting and watching, or they might say something every now and again, but we're not having like in-depth conversation. And then, of course, again, you know, as I'm cleaning up, we'll have conversation. We'll talk about the meal plan, the menu for the next week, you know, and then we'll do it again the next week.
Yeah, but some probably sit there and talk your ear off, don't they?
I mean, sometimes they will. And, you know, I'll say what I can when I can.
But you're busy.
Yeah, because, of course, you're trying to get in and out in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Also. So I think as they continue to see us do it,
yeah,
you know, they understand a little bit more.
And I'd say, listen, Frank, you can sit here and keep talking to me, but I might do a double measure of the salt in this macaroni and cheese, and it ain't going to taste good. So zip it.
Or, you know, the other part, because if I keep talking, it's going to take me longer, you know, and they might still have appointments or other things to go through also. So.
Oh, you say that I'm going to get out of your hair.
Yes. Yeah, so, right? You know, all of those things you can come into play.
Where do you hide the Oreos while you're cooking?
There are no Oreos.
I'd do it right underneath the grocery bag.
No Oreos.
So you do that, and then how long are you in the house for?
Usually about 2 to 2.5 hours. You know, I always tell them, yeah, depending on what items they pick for that week, you know, some things may take a little bit longer, but the goal is to be out by, you know, in 2.5 hours.
And you're shopping on your own?
Yeah, we do the grocery shopping before, because we, you know, we make sure that we're only getting what they need for the service. Like, we're not going to stock their kitchens, and we want the groceries to be fresh. So it's right before.
Do you wash your dishes there?
Yeah, wash the dishes there, because, you know, a lot of times we'll have another service, not right after, but, you know, we'll have another service. So we wash our dishes and we clean up their kitchen also.
Did you say now, Shanika, that do you have an employee yet or not?
So I had hired my first employee right before COVID. And then COVID happened.
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah. And because, you know, people are unsure of what was happening, you know, business slowed down a little bit. And
right,
so I let her go. And
they don't want people in the house.
Exactly.
And
exactly. And, you know, I was really just getting my gusto, because
right,
I left work in November. So, you know, it was like November, yeah, December. I was, you know, going to the meetings, starting to really do the marketing well, and, you, yeah, know, getting out there. And yeah, and then COVID happened. So I let her go. And so things have been starting to pick up again. And so I just hired a chef. They'll be starting in another week or two. So I'm excited about that.
And is your plan to do a little bit still, or do, yes, you get them in and they're going to do it and you're going to do the other stuff?
No, because I have one client that is very, very particular. So I know that I will keep her, you know, as my own client.
Yeah.
But I will try to transition chefs, you know, a couple of the other clients over. And as we grow, you know, keep filling their schedule.
Yeah. Would the goal be to always have the same chef, or is it good to flip them out so people don't get so dependent on one?
No, the goal is to always have the same chef, because we want them to be comfortable with the person coming into their home,
yeah,
and that they can establish that relationship and that rapport. So, yeah, it's always to have the same chef.
See, at the pharmacy, we do some of that. But here's a problem that we find. Like, when you get some nurse or some lady that always wants to talk to Julie, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Well, that's good until Julie's on vacation or quits.
Yes.
And you can only lie for so long. When Julie quits in 2017 and 203 times so far, you've made up excuses of why she can't come to the phone. It's time to change her. No, but if someone were to move on or whatever, yes. or have get fired, then they know you probably, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
And they then know you could say, this is our new so-and-so, and then you're making that connection probably exactly. again, right?
Exactly.
Instead of just a stranger showing up, you're that bond for them.
Exactly.
Still.
I will always be that, you know, go-between, following up, making sure business is, you know, making sure their food is okay.
Yeah.
Were there any problems, you know, anything like that, so...
Besides that one that is yours, is that enough? Like one a week? Like some pharmacists I talk to, they're like, no matter how big I get, I'm always going to go and still work, you know? And I was like, no, you're not. I mean, you might, but I mean, if you're like at a billion-dollar business eventually yeah. with the dreams that I talk to people about who have started different things, you're not going to fly back to your pharmacy and, you know, work for 4 hours a week. You know, I joke with them about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you like not do any of it? Was that your method or not?
I mean, you know I'll always be the face. So whenever there's a consultation or anything, I'm that first face they see. I want them to always know me as the owner, as the face of the business. You know, if and when that other client stops using the service, I don't know that I would continue, you know, because again, I still do have other aspirations and I have my other business that at some point I'm really going to want to grow and groom and things like that too. So yeah.
Wait, say that part again. If the client, what?
If she decided that she no longer wanted to use the service.
Oh, this one
yeah,
lady.
This one lady. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Or, you know, if, I wasn't able to, you know, even the ones I have, I'll keep them for as long as they want to keep the service if they don't want to transition over. But, gotcha. You know, once they were to either no longer use the service or something happened, then I don't think, you know, my goal is to not just to forever be in the kitchen. Yeah.
Your goal would be to not be in the kitchen at all.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Understood. It's not like a love of yours to be cooking necessarily.
Well, I do. I love cooking. But then I realize that when you're cooking for everybody else all the time, you stop cooking for yourself. As much, because you're in the kitchen, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. So
right.
then, you know, my healthy eating, it doesn't take a back burn, but I have to plan it so much more because otherwise I'm not going to want to come in the kitchen at the end of the day and cook for myself.
Well, you just nibble while you're doing it. Just taste.
Well, no, I can't taste their food
taste
like
that.
I taste my food.
Oh, come on.
So
COVID schmovid.
No.
Can't dip your spoon in
well,
there.
Well, I mean,
just take
you know, we have tasting spoons, so there are times that you taste stuff, but you know, it's not like you're tasting everything.
Before we get on to your divine hands, what aspirations? Is that a right word? Aspirations?
Yeah.
Sounds like someone's choking on their food. Isn't that the same word?
It is. Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, you aspirate when you choke on the food. They're aspirating. Yes,
that's
it's an interesting word.
That's a strange combination.
It is,
especially for someone who this could mean either thing.
That is
because you're working, you're waiting on older people who maybe have a little bit of sleep apnea, you know, like trouble swallowing and stuff. And then we're talking about food, and then I have to use aspirations in the same sentence, and people might not know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, no, it's true.
All right, so what other aspirations do you have then for Chefs for Seniors? Is this like a springboard then to do your different stuff, or do you want to grow with this?
So for Chefs for Seniors, I really would like to grow it to scale. And so scale means having 30 clients consistently. Then that obviously means having a nice role of chefs and everything like that. So I really want that, and to hopefully expand the territory that I have also with Chefs for Seniors.
The territory would be like right now you're supposed to, or you stay in a certain zip codes and
exactly,
so on, right?
Exactly. So, you know, the goal would be in the next 2 to 3 years to be able to expand to at least one more territory.
If your neighboring territory was already taken, you could jump
over
one.
Yes, you don't have to have it in the, it doesn't have to be your next door territory, yeah. to have another territory.
Shanika, is 30 a magic number? Like, does that work out with so many hours per week or different things?
No, I think just over the years as they've been working to build and they looked at the financials for them, that was a sustainable goal, you know, to have 30,
right.
30 clients. So, you know, obviously my first goal for myself is 10 a week. Every week, 10 consistent clients every week, and then to continue to build from there.
And 30 would get you to like a certain comfort, but then exactly. it could go up from there. Exactly. You would need more help and so on. But 30 is kind of a magic number financially,
exactly.
to do things that you'd want to do then and so
exactly.
on. Exactly. That's really cool. So then when does Divine Hands come into this?
So, I mean, because Chefs for Seniors, even though I give it my full-time energy,
yeah.
You know, obviously it's still not at scale right now.
Yeah.
So I'm still working on the backside, mm-hmm. working to build Divine Hands, because as Chefs for Seniors grows and it's running itself, because that's my goal,
yeah.
for it to run itself, that then I can put even more time and passion into Divine Hands.
Yeah. What is Divine Hands? We talked a little bit about it. Tell me again.
So it is a business that is focused on nutrition and medication or pharmacy intertwining. So I'm working on my master's in nutrition right now because I really wanted to get an even more in-depth understanding of nutrition. Because, you know, in this age, we're bombarded by try this diet, do this, do that. When you really go and look, nobody has really done the research, or, you know, they just say, go do the keto diet, and it becomes this thing. But, you know, is that the healthiest thing for you if you have diabetes? Or, you know, when you're looking at the research, it's not most of those studies, they start off keto, but then when you look at it,
yeah.
they'll tell you they raise people's carbohydrate level to a, you know, and they can't give you the maximum level because everybody tolerates carbohydrates differently.
They start off keto too, because a lot of times you're losing that water attachment weight. And so it's a good incentive. It might
exactly.
not be a true incentive, but at least it gets you going.
It gets you going, and it gets that body switching over to using fat, you know, to metabolize and burn the energy. And then, but you're not supposed to stay there. And we get so focused on, let's just get into ketosis. We're not supposed to stay in ketosis. It's really more of a fat burning, fat adaptation. So your body learns how to do both.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you need to burn carbs and sometimes you need to burn fat. And when I lost my weight, that is how I started. Like, I started because I actually had a patient who had a lot of health issues, and her pulmonologist suggested the keto diet for her. So when she came to me, because she was on Coumadin and I was managing her Coumadin, you know, he told her, you need to talk to your pharmacist because we need to figure out how to adjust your Coumadin for going on this diet. So that was when I first heard about it. And that's before it got as popular as it did.
Yeah, right.
Again. And,
yes.
But I never did it full on because from the beginning, my body let me know it was not going to work, you know, trying to do only 20 net carbs or, you know, whatever. So I I always did my own, but it made me want to research more. And, you know, because I have those patients with diabetes and high blood pressure,
yeah.
I really wanted to help them find that happy place, because I feel like there's no one diet that fits all people, you
yeah.
know, whether you want to be vegan, vegetarian, you know, low carb.
Yeah.
Let's figure out what your body responds to best, and let's create a plan for you so that we can get you off some of your medications. So, you know, that's a lot of where Divine Hands is focused on, as
gotcha.
Well as like nutrigenomics. So, you know, I've partnered with a company where we can do, you know, the genetic testing to kind of see like so that maybe you have, like for myself, I found out that B12, I automatically run low in B12, which I know was true because many years ago, I did a Daniel fast, and then I decided to stay vegetarian. And like, I started getting fissures in the corner of my mouth, like all those things that show you that you're B12 deficient. And of course, at that time, I didn't know, and I wasn't taking a supplement. And so I started eating meat again and got better. But, you know, it confirmed for me that I am one of those people, like, I have to either take a B12 supplement every day or make sure that I have the meat in my diet to get that B12. So, you know.
Yeah, B12 is the one that, because you were vegan.
Yes, for a while.
And B12 is the one that they have problems with because that's only, well, it's two things. Well, no, it's one thing. It's in animals. But if you talk to the vegans, they say, well, no, you still don't have to eat meat because if you were in the wild and you pulled carrots and potatoes out of the ground, you'd be eating the microbes that are alive and have that.
Yes. But even now, they recommend that every vegan takes a B12 supplement because we just are, you know, unfortunately, and it's just the truth, our soil is not what it used to be. So a lot of those, you know, those micronutrients that we would have gotten before, unless you're truly growing like your own everything, you can't control it. So it's really recommended that if, especially if you're doing a hardcore vegan diet, to take a B12 supplement.
I tried a lot of different diets, but my problem is I try like three of them at the same time.
That doesn't work either.
That doesn't work either. Shanika, so your master's online?
Yes. Completely online. Benedictine University, Master's in Nutrition and Wellness.
Is that pre-recorded online stuff or are they actually doing classes?
No, we do classes, you know, because it's a higher level master's course. The professors a lot of times will record their lectures, but it's a lot of discussion, you know, a lot of different readings, things like that. So I was very particular when I was looking for a program.
What the theories were, right?
Yes, what the theories were. And then also because that we are in a technology age and because we are in a time and I wanted to build a business, I focused on a program that specifically spoke to technology and building a business. So, you know, it was only one of the handfuls of programs that was truly a nutritional focus that also gave you classes on building a nutritional business and utilizing technology.
Well, they probably know that some people's goals for that. So they combine all that together. Yes. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That they touch on all of those.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm excited. Actually, right now my class is venture planning in nutrition. I just started it yesterday. So, and we do quarters instead of semesters. So, for this 8 weeks, it's truly building our nutrition business. So I'll probably do a lot of tweaking for Divine Hands over the next 8 weeks. So it's actually probably perfect timing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
The Divine Hands, your business model of that, will that be similar just because of habit or you like the idea of visiting like an hour a week or something like that? Or how will that play out?
So no, that one will be different. I offer a few different plans for people so they could get a one-time assessment if they're just trying to, you know, figure out about their medications or maybe they just want to discuss, like I call like a roadmap to a healthier lifestyle, or, you know, we can work through a program together. So that's also an option. So, and I do remote, so almost everything is virtual. So that worked out too.
Do you have a certain age group in mind or is it across the board?
So it's going to be across the board, but I'm focusing more on anybody that has a chronic illness.
Gotcha.
So whether it's lupus, you know, a heart disease, a diabetes, you know, a rheumatoid arthritis, any kind of chronic illness really that, you know, you're taking a ton of medications, generally speaking, and you're looking for other ways to look to become healthier.
Would they typically pay for that when they sign up for it? They're putting their card information in, stuff like that. That's pretty smooth nowadays.
Yeah. I have a payment processing system, so they can put their card information in their self, you know, so they don't have to worry about me getting any of that information.
Right when they sign up for it, they're deciding and then they're paying for it right then.
Right, depending on which program they're doing. So if it's the one time, obviously, you know, you're paying up front. And then if it's something that's more spread out, then, you know, they have the option to do a payment plan.
So Shanika, where do you see Divine Hands versus Chefs for Seniors as far as percentages of your income or week or things like that? Do you have a feeling for one of them moving faster or?
Yeah, I think right now Chefs for Seniors is going to move faster.
Yeah.
Especially with the COVID and everything that's going on. People, and you don't have to be a senior to use Chefs for Seniors, but that is who it's geared towards. But, you know, with COVID and then we're getting ready to get into flu season and all of these things, I see Chefs for Seniors really picking up first, which is fine with me because it was more of the, you know, monetary investment. So looking and having that return on investment is important to start with.
You know, it's easier for people probably to buy a product, you know, when, yes, when they're, people are used to spending money on food.
Exactly. And, you know, now you get to a point, well, you don't want to keep ordering and having it delivered, or, you know, you get tired of cooking too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're 6 months into this thing. You know, and for some seniors, they can't really cook, you know, they are living at home, but they can't. So, you know, it makes a difference. So, yeah. So I would say right now, you know, Chefs for Seniors probably gets 80% of my time. And then, you know, between school and Divine Hands, that's where the other 20% goes, for right now. And then definitely once I'm out of school, cause I graduate in May next year.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So once I'm out, then, you know, I can take that time and really push it into Divine Hands, and hopefully, you know, Chefs for Seniors has grown and it's running itself more, and I can really put some more effort into Divine Hands.
Okay. I know you're doing this to help people and, you know, nutrition and that kind of stuff, but you could do that easier through a job somewhere, you know, and clock in and clock out and so on. What desires do you have that you're on your own? Is it money? Is it freedom? Is it trying not to be bored? What are the reasons, would you say?
So obviously, of course, you know, still the not generic, but I do really want to help people. But personally, legacy.
Oh.
And then also I'm at a place in my life that I don't have a family yet. I want to. And when I that time comes, I don't want to have to clock in and out, and I don't want to have to answer anybody else. I want it to be mine. You know, I can give to my kids how I want to, be there for them how I want to. And that's really my why at this point. You know, getting older, I just realized I didn't want to be tied to something. Like, I wanted to leave something for somebody else and be able to do it my way.
You better have plugged your poodle's ears when you said you don't have a family yet.
Yes, I know. Because you see her sitting here. Like,
see, you're looking at the back of her head. I'm seeing a tear coming down her eye.
Oh, she's my little old spoiled lady. Yes, so she is my family. She's definitely my family.
I was going to say, you better rephrase that.
Yes.
When you talk legacy, are you talking a business to pass down, or like a personal mission to hand down? What do you mean by that, would you say?
Both. So, you know, I hope that Chefs for Seniors continues to stay and growing, and that it becomes a family business, that I'll be able to, you know, pass it down to the next and the next and the next. So that's definitely a part of it. And then, yeah, a personal legacy too. When people think of me, I just always want them to be able to, like, she really cared about people. She, you know, had a passion for helping and, you know, getting people back, helping them to get their health back. So both parts of that.
And it has your face more on that because you were responsible for making sure that happened and so on.
Exactly.
Not that an employee can't do that, but the employee is often fulfilling someone else's mission, but this is your mission.
Exactly. And, you know, working as a clinical pharmacist, I mean, technically they pay me to adjust your medication.
Right.
They don't pay me to help you get off medication.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, when those things start conflicting, you know, you have to figure out, how does that look? And, you know, I believe medication has a place, but we could be doing so much more, and we've just gotten to this place of complacency. So I want to help people find that again and find their health, and, you know, because your health is your wealth. So
right. So Shanika, you wake up tomorrow and you find yourself as a 17-year-old entering into your senior year of college. What's your path going to be the next 4 or 5 years, as far as, are you going to go to college? What are you going to study in this year 2020? What are you going to do? What path are you going to take?
That's so interesting. Because it took me a long journey to get here. So if I woke up tomorrow in my young self, I think I'd still do it the same. Like, go to college. And my degree is in biology. So, you know, I would explore. I don't know that I would just go the science path, but see what all I enjoyed and figure out where life took me. Like, maybe I just wouldn't declare a major at first.
You would take the year to search on the internet, search.
Yes.
Where you wanted to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
What college do you think you'd pick? Or would you pick a college? Because nowadays, you know, I mean, there's some fascinating stuff that like Google's going to start offering certificates, like 6 months things and stuff. And
I saw that. It's really cool. I saw that. I think I would probably do both. Like, I think I would try, especially if I could go to, I don't know that I would pick a school particularly, but I would look for like a state school with low tuition.
Right.
Because, you know, because I would not want to be saddled with debt or have my parents saddled with debt.
Well, let's face it. Maybe you're not sure, but right now there's still some value in having a BS after your name or having a degree, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I would also, you know, if I didn't do like that Google type program of coding,
yeah,
I think I would have a double major. So in this world, I'd be ready with and have some computer knowledge for whatever I was getting ready to do, because technology, coding, all of that is our future. So if you don't at least partake in that, I think you're lost to a certain extent.
So a state school, you'd pick one of those. I know you said you'd look, but what do you think you might end up in? What degree for 4 years?
That's a really good question. I mean, because, you know, my mind just bases it off of what I've always liked, which is maybe I would actually go more nutrition.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, because I think food is our future, too. And there's a lot of things you can do with that.
Right.
And people, you know, hydroponics, all these things, people are learning how to regrow food. So I think it would probably be like a dual major in maybe nutrition and some kind of computer science or computer coding or something like that.
You wouldn't worry about the business part yet, like business school.
No, because I think you can. You can find, you know, like some stuff you can do at the beginning and then you can figure the business out later.
Yeah, right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So state school, 4 year degree. And then what would be your thoughts of year five? What would you be thinking of? Would you be thinking of further schooling or not? Because in this life, mm-hmm. you got your BS in biology.
Yes.
And then you went to pharmacy school.
And then I went to pharmacy school.
How soon after did you go?
A year.
You took a year off?
Yeah, I took a year off.
What'd you do?
I worked at actually in a lab.
Oh, interesting.
For a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So 4 years of nutrition school. And then what comes in year five and six?
I'd actually, you know, if it was hopefully a post-COVID world, I think I would take a year and travel and learn different cultures and culinary and maybe try to learn a language.
Yeah.
You know, and bring all that back into whatever business I was going to try to create and see if I wanted to go to business school thereafter or if I could just start the business and consider it later.
Yeah, I'm not so sure if I'd be a whole lot different than that. I don't know what I would pick. I have a son in mechanical engineering and I've always watched those shows about like how it's made. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
Yeah, I've seen some of those shows.
I always thought it'd be cool like to help this factory do this one thing with a conveyor, not a conveyor belt, but a factory machine, you know. And my son's into like the robotic arms and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I thought it'd be cool to do that and then move on and then solve something for, you know, this one's going to be a speaker maker and then the next guy's a shoemaker. Next guy makes tennis rackets, whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, figure that out. I'm not so sure that I wouldn't do the same thing, travel and then just start thinking. It's a different world now. I mean, you got the world at your fingertips versus years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I had some friends that studied abroad, you know, when we were in undergrad. I wish I would have done that. And maybe one of my years in my program, you know, in the future me would have been able, in that nutrition program to do a year or a semester abroad and learn that and then maybe go back to that country, you know, or somewhere else. But yeah, I just think now, you know, globally, you have to, you know, you have to understand the globe and not just our, where you are physically yourself.
The United States used to be like a pool 10 feet deep of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And now with the internet and so on, you know, those walls have opened up and that pool has spread out, you know, and it might be a foot deep because it's spread across all the different countries. But with the internet, it's like every country now has that foot, that same foot of water, you know.
Yeah.
Not to take away from the U.S. by any means, but I mean, everybody has a lot more opportunity, and especially with these guys like Google, they're going to put like weather balloons, like float weather balloons, like thousands or hundreds or millions. They'll go up so high and that will be the internet.
Oh, wow. So that everybody can have access to the internet.
It's a smaller world now, you know? Well, Shanika, what a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad we got a chance to meet.
Me too. It was amazing. I appreciate the time.
Congratulations on everything you're doing. That's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. And I can't wait to, you know, hear some more of the people that you interview. It's so nice to see how pharmacists are really changing pharmacy and just doing all kinds of things.
It's really cool to see all the different avenues out there and the different personalities out there too.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool. Well, thanks, Shanika. We'll keep in touch.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.